SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Nyala Kadich, Wajik Nyunga Mort, Kayang Kadak Nija Wajik Buja. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to country, sky and waterways. We pay our respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples listening today. Welcome to Nyunga Wellbeing. I'm your host, Brooke Collard. I'm a Ballardong Wajik Nyunga woman, and in this season of Nyunga Wellbeing, I'll be speaking to the next generation of leaders, young people of the Nyunga community, about a Nyunga perspective on self and community care. Rakita's main role is within her family business, Aboriginal Productions and Promotions, as a cultural educator and researcher. She delivers cultural programs, workshops, and professional development training. She's very passionate about cultural knowledge and language preservation.
Do you mind telling us a little bit about like yourself and like what you do in the community?
Yeah, for sure. So I am a Noongar, and I also have connections up to Yamaji. In Noongar country, I'm connected from here in Wajak, also up to Yuwarrup, out Ballardong, Birundarrup, and then further south, Mrinang, Kanyang, Wilman, and Warradun. So quite a bit of area that my family connections cover, but I've really grown up and spent most of my life between Wajak and Birundarrup. And so that's where I feel like my strong connection to kind of very north of Birundarrup around North Dandalup. I spent a lot of my childhood there. So although I'm like proud of my connection through all those areas, I do know that that's kind of where my strongest belonging is, around Wajak, Ballardong. Oh, sorry, Birundarrup and Ballardong too.
I love watching what you do. It's really like inspiring, because for myself, as you know, like a Noongar person living off country in Broome most of the time, that's how I get like my fix of Noongar Buja, seeing things that like your people like yourself doing incredible things, like at King's Park. You do like cultural excursions, and like just like I love the passion that you have with like sharing culture with people. Like, what do you think kind of drives you to want to share that with wider audiences?
Oh, well, thank you. I also love watching what you do as well. So it's a good question. And I at first did it kind of like as part of what my family has always done. So it was just what we grew up with, doing dance. And then, okay, well, now we start to teach dance. And growing up with a language speaker in the household. And then, okay, well, we just share that as we're teaching. And so it was just kind of inherent for me for a lot of the beginning of my journey. And then as I got older and I started to realize, oh, okay, not everybody had the same experience growing up, I realized that I really want to go into that area, especially with our children, of doing that cultural engagement and helping the kids to feel more strong in their identity and their culture. And then the bonus is for all the children that aren't Aboriginal that also engage, it's exposure for them and learning more about the place that they live and more about the country and about the culture. So it's a win-win. But adults too, it's never too late. Lots of adults that come and engage and learn. It's really, yeah, across all ages, it's never too late. So, yeah.
Oh, that's so special, because I think especially in those spaces that you're working in, you know, you've got that 0 to 5 age range that you're teaching a lot of younger education to, and sometimes people are starting from ground zero and they can be a bit shame when they're a bit older and they don't know stuff. So do you feel like you have to invite people in a bit more sometimes when they are coming into those spaces?
Yes. And that's the other thing, is especially when we get it to high school. And that shame factor is so strong when you're in high school, and some of the kids that maybe don't want to dance in front of their peers or whatever it might be. And the other thing with learning culture is I don't like to spotlight children. So being like, you're a nyunga, what do you think? Or, oh yeah, you should just, you can dance, you'll be right. Nominating kids without talking to them first or spotlighting them to answer questions. I don't like to do that. And I think that if the child is comfortable in their learning, that's going to be the best outcome. So, yeah, they can wear what they'd like to dance as long as it's appropriate and they feel comfortable in their bodies, they're going to dance their best. So if they want to wear a big shirt, awesome, do that. If you want to wear a little singlet, as long as it's appropriate, do that. So, yeah, in that style of learning to try and counter that shame factor, I would just try to make the space as safe and comfortable for the kids as possible and check in what they want to do.
Just talking about like cultural safety in schools, for example, I spoke about this with a young girl earlier this week, and I was talking about how having to watch Rabbit Proof Fence in school is a massive thing because, you know, the curriculum uses it to educate on like some of our terrible history that's happened. Well, when I was in school anyway, there's no conversation before the movie's chucked on what to do when there are Indigenous kids in the class, because I remember for me, I think I was like 13 or 14 when that played in school, and immediately, you know, like everyone goes, shook, like turns their head around to you to kind of go like, oh, you're Indigenous, so now we have to ask you all these questions. And, you know, there was like some pretty like terrible language used because at the time, like, you know, they're 13, 14, they don't know, they can't use that language. What would you say are some things that teachers should be doing to make classrooms more culturally safe around those sorts of scenarios?
Yeah, that is a good question. I do think about that. You know that meme when it's like someone brings up like a didgeridoo or something and all the kids all look at you? It's it is very much that. I think that I should also preface and say that I'm not actually a teacher. I'm not qualified. I've really developed as a presenter, so I'm doing a lot of training over the years as a presenter, but I've just been lucky to be in the education space and to pick up a lot of tips, not only just from being a nyunga in school, but also then going into schools and seeing how different kids react. Cultural safety in the classroom, I would say there's a few things. It is always just in a way that's safe and comfortable for the child to just check in, to not assume. I've had instances where people with the best intentions who are learning nyunga language then went and practiced by talking to a nyunga child in their classroom in front of their peers, and the child didn't understand what was being said to them. And I had to explain to this lady, and again, with the best intentions, but speaking someone's language to them and you're not part of their culture, having like a non-Aboriginal person talk your language to you and you can't understand it, the shame factor on that is huge. And so just checking in, and maybe that child knows a couple words, maybe you can have that yarn quietly, but just not making any assumptions on where anyone's at on their journey. So, yeah, that's the first one, I would say. And so not spotlighting, not making assumptions. I feel like community is so important as well. So checking in with families, guardians, whichever way you can connect with Aboriginal students and their families and whatnot as well. It's good to bring that community perspective into your school and into your classroom as well. And they might end up being your best friends in that space, because then you have someone that you know you can just check in with here and there. Not someone that's going to be like your free consultant to go to all the time, but just someone that you know that you can check in with. And that's another thing, is to build those networks and to let the community know it's also a safe space for them to come in to the school. So, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot more answers than that, but that's the first I always think of, is just for the Aboriginal children, then their cultural safety.
And that's why I think it's so important how you were doing all that work with your Mooditj Monday series, because I loved it every week when that would pop up. That'd be like my Monday highlight.
Oh, awesome. That's cool. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Yes. So do you mind telling us like why you felt the desire to do that?
Yeah, and that was actually also based on being in a lot of schools and in a lot of areas where educators were asking where are there more resources that we can use that we can then, you know, relate to the curriculum that is from an Aboriginal voice? Because at this point, I was also doing teacher PDs where teachers that wanted to do cultural perspective, professional development, we basically just talked to them about how best to engage with the Aboriginal community and Aboriginal students. But then some of these schools didn't have any Aboriginal students or connection to the community. So then, okay, how do you engage with Aboriginal content in your classroom in a way that's respectful, that's not culturally appropriating, where you're not teaching on things that aren't appropriate for you to teach, all of that? And from that, we got the questions, okay, well, we would suggest using Aboriginal created and led resources if you can't get someone into the school, and to make sure that it's active Aboriginal voice in all of the learning that you're doing, and to leave anything that's particularly cultural based, leave that to the people from that area. So if it's Noongar country, it's a Noongar person. If you're out in Wangatha country, it's a Wangatha person. It's always custodial as well. And so, yeah, people basically said, okay, well, that's great, but where can we get resources? And so for a long time I linked, there's so many resources now. It's just, there's so much, it's awesome. And then it gave me the idea of, I want to talk about this particular thing, but I can't find many resources on it, or I want to talk about this, but from a Noongar perspective. And so we decided, let's just do mini videos.
And as well, I'd love to ask you, because it was so crazy, you kind of went a bit viral last year.
Yes.
So do you mind telling us about the space of, like, Welcome to Countries? Because you do them quite often and on some really big platforms, like for Harry Styles when he came here. What was that like?
Yes, I should say I really just get to tag along. So I'm quite lucky that Dad brings me into these spaces with him. So he gets asked to do these welcomes and ask if I can come and just stand with him, do a song. And just, yeah, so I'm there to, I really get to tag along. So I'm very lucky to be able to do that. And it's, the Harry Styles one was so unexpected. It was a day or two beforehand of Harry Styles is coming, the team, his team requested a welcome to country. I believe that the Australian hosts explained what it is and that they said, yeah, we'd love to do that and do the respectful thing. And so my idea was, oh, it might be for the team, or it might be, I didn't actually know it would be in front of everybody. So that was a surprise to me, arriving on the day and they took me out onto stage and with Dad. And I just thought, yeah, seeing that many people will never be normal. I don't know how they do it all the time. But, yeah, it was just a sea of people. And I was like, oh, okay. So I'm singing a song for everyone. And very luckily, as we went backstage, he actually ran out and said thank you, which he didn't have to do. I appreciated that. He actually needed to be back on stage, but he ran back quickly to say thank you.
Wow.
And I just quickly said, can I get a photo with you? Also didn't know, like, the Harry style law that you're not, like, he doesn't take photos. I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
Well, not often. Wow. With people. So if I had known that, I probably wouldn't have asked, to be honest. I don't like to encroach on people's, I don't want to, like, push the boundaries or anything. And also then I wouldn't have put it on my story.
Right. I had no idea that was a thing.
Yeah. I didn't know that either. And so, yeah, I put it on my story. And again, just on my story. Like, I didn't post it to go out public or anything, but he has a pretty amazing fan base who found my story and screenshot it, and then suddenly it was everywhere. And and I was like, oh my gosh, what is happening here? And I was getting messages from people all over the world and in different languages, and I was Google translating because I was curious. And I was like, what was he like? It was really cool. And he does have an amazing fan base, and everyone reaching out was just basically like, well, how did you meet him? Da 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 da. And so that was a really cool experience. Definitely wasn't my, what's it called? Wasn't my gig. It was Dad who just very kindly brought me along, and he didn't know who Harry Styles was. So
that's he was, hilarious.
Yeah, and I was played him a few songs. Oh, yeah, I know. And so it was a really awesome experience for sure. And it's cool to see more people internationally doing that and bringing Welcome to Country to the big stage like that. And, yeah, it's something where we're getting a bit of pushback on Welcome at the moment and acknowledgement. So to be able to have large international artists say actually, like, we want to have that to our thousands of guests, yeah, I think it's a cool thing.
Yeah, and, like, you know, it might even eventuate into some of those people who are reaching out to you from around the world are like, oh, what's, like, Noongar mean? Like, what's that? And they might search it up now because of that one photo where you broke the law.
For sure. And, like, classic me as well, I can't help myself. People are like, why did you do that, da-da-da, asking questions in a nice way, like curiosity. And I'm like, well, it's called a Welcome to Country and here's why we do it. And so I was like, yeah, I was messaging people from all over that were asking about it and just explaining, you know, when Noongar were Aboriginal, this is one of our protocols. So it was cool to be able to actually explain to people. And I could have just not responded because it was like, but I was like, no, I just want to. Yeah, and I was like, oh, I'm just going to let people know why we do it. I couldn't help myself. So, yeah.
Oh, but that's amazing, though. How did you find that people internationally interacted with you talking about what a Welcome to Country meant?
It's with some cases, it was a bit of a language barrier too. So I did in one case, I Google translated something really short for a lady. But it was pretty well received. It was a bit wild. Now in hindsight, knowing what I know, would I have probably asked for a photo? Probably not. But I do really, respect that. Yeah, he was a really respectful person, and to ask for the welcome and request it and then just letting me take a photo and whatnot. It was really, very respectful person and team. So that was cool. It was a good experience.
That's so cool because, like, my only close experience to that is I happened to accidentally get in a group photo with Kate Walsh once.
Oh, cool.
Because, like, she's so supportive of Mob. She always goes to, like, Sydney Festoz and, like, she goes out of her way to, like, go to the First Nations screenings all the time and introduce herself to everybody. Like, she's so lovely. I had the same thing. Like, it just happened to be in a photo. I didn't think anything of it because it was a group photo. And I was having people from, like, everywhere around the world being like, can you ask her to follow me on Instagram?
Oh, that's so funny.
And all this. And I was like, I don't know her like that, but okay.
Yeah, no, that is. That's I had people like, what was he like? What was the other question I thought was so funny? Oh, can you help me to meet him? That I was like, no, it was 30 seconds of my life. Like, I think I talked to him for maybe 30 seconds and then he had to run away. So I was like, no, I'm not in the inner circle just yet, I don't think. But yeah, it was overall a bit unexpected. I'm trying to remember back that far, and I believe it was the day before that it was confirmed.
Yeah, I mean, that's so lucky they managed to get you guys for that because, you know, like,
that's true.
There's so much, Mob. I know you have to go through their calendar because they're booked out months in advance, you know.
I missed my basketball game for that. So and I never miss basketball. So I was like, nah, I better for this. No,
you know, priorities. Yes. So when you say you want to be a presenter, like, do you mean, like, in a specific way? Like, do you just like public speaking or do you want to be like a news reporter?
Oh, I think it's so funny. I'm still kind of like in this area where I know that cultural engagement and education is what I love and what I want to do, but specifically where that leads me, I'm quite open to because I do love so many areas. I love the arts, doing performance or even just dramatic arts, dancing arts, whatever it might be, music. But I do also really love just the education space of presenting like a cultural awareness or going into schools or universities, whatever it might be. I also love the environmental space. So, teaching and talking more about our environment and Noongar ways of caring for country. And I don't know where I'm going to go, but being right now where I am, where I'm, a few hands in a few different pots, it does feel good to just be able to engage and to share. And I most certainly do not know everything. So I'm still learning along the way as well, but it's just nice to be able to share what I do know. So, we have a few projects coming up where we are planning to get Mortgage Mondays up and running again after a little hiatus, and my friend and I are looking to start producing kind of like a bit more of art prints to put out publicly.
Oh, yeah.
And especially Dad's art, because he does all of this amazing artwork and he doesn't really so much sell it or put it out there anymore unless it's through maybe like the Wildcats jerseys or things like that.
Oh, but so actual, exclusive now.
Yeah. I'm like, so actual art pieces people aren't really getting these days. So that's another project I'm looking at the moment in the art space. And yeah, wherever I end up, sure I'll find joy.
You sound like me where, like, you know, I like jumping between different spaces because, again, this is just speaking from like a film perspective. Mm. A lot of mob are similar because we don't get pigeonholed into just doing drama or just doing documentary or just doing animation. We're all storytellers at heart.
You know, it's definitely something where I've also done The Office 9 to 5. And I know that some people are built for that and love it and just a routine. They're like, it's like, it's just what they need to do. And it's so opposite for me. I did Office 9 to 5. I would like watch the clock for my break to just walk outside for 15 minutes. And like, it just drained me. I only did it for like 6 months. And I was like, I was starting to actually feel, I wouldn't say depressed, but I was definitely feeling quite low. And I was like, I can't do this. And the work I was doing was good work, still in the Aboriginal health space. But I was like, no, good people I worked with, good job, the monotony of every day sitting at a desk at a computer. I know some people are just so good at it and thrive, and I can't. So if I can do like a day where I'm doing baby story time in the morning and then I'm going to a university in the afternoon and then I'm running a bushwalk the next day out in the hills, that for me is just like, it's a bit chaotic, but I love to be able to do something different every day. That's what kind of keeps me like full of energy. And I'd rather run from Balga down to Frio and back to the city in one day than stay in one spot for the full day. Like it's I don't know why. But I love the chaos. So I love the change of scenery.
So do you find like that's kind of what helped you with like an office job or what you kind of do for your general well-being when you are feeling a bit low like that?
Yeah, I do find little walks, whether it's out in the hills or even at Kings Park or along the river, any new spots that I can find as well, I will try and go and do just little walks and go into those areas where I can just be on my own and get my steps up and, yeah, just be out, you know, on country. I also think that, like, anywhere we go, we're on country, you know, it's just been some bit being paved over. But to be able to actually get out into, like, yeah, especially the hills is, like, my place where I feel the best. So in summer, in the heart of summer, I'm pretty sad because I don't really mess around in the bush when it's super hot because I just know that I'll run into snakes before it's too hot to be walking around. So, yeah, this time of year, it's perfect. Love it. So, yeah, always find myself out in the hills.
Yeah, I mean, I'm biased. Like, Geraldine's my favourite time of year because my birthday is Geraldine.
Oh, yeah, true, true.
But I'm the same. Like, yeah, like, I want to be walking out in the bush, but it's going to be, like, nice and cool, like, now. And maybe you're being drawn to that Ballardong side too, heading towards the hills.
I do love my all my Ballardong mob. So when I get to go out that way and go see them as well, it's like, I'm like, oh, this is just beautiful, beautiful country. Even that drive out there is one of my favourite drives.
No, nothing compares to that road heading towards like York and everything. Hey, I love it.
Because
I do the same thing. Like, because my dad's side of the family is all Wadjala, but they all live around the York area.
Yeah.
So like, I've done that like holidaying in York like so much as a kid. So like, that's so ingrained in my head where I'm like, yeah, like gotta go back there.
Yeah.
And you know, like reconnecting to like, because as a kid, like I grew up Jehovah's Witness. Mm-hmm. So it's actually like they view it as pagan to do any like Noongar cultural stuff.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, okay. So there was a lot of stuff like I wasn't allowed to talk about growing up. Mm. And then I'm not in that religion anymore. But as an adult, I've had to do like a lot of work to like reconnect to like family and learning like extra language and stuff. Because, Yeah, you kind of get like cut off from it in a like religious sense. So
for sure.
Yeah, it's so important to like, you know, have those connections for your well-being, just to like know your identity and yourself.
Yes. Did you feel like conflicted in that upbringing of wanting to culturally learn, but then being like, oh no, like I can't do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because like this is just my own opinion. I feel like when there's things like that going on, it just encourages you to just be sneaky.
Yeah, yeah, true. That's
you know, like I was joking to Elisha yesterday that like I watched all the Harry Potter movies and read all the books in secret, you know.
Oh, wow.
But like it's stuff like, you know, I always from when I was little like felt this like pull to always be on country and like wanting to learn, but I had no idea who my teachers were and where I could get that knowledge from, because even like my pop, so Robert Riley, he apparently like knew a lot of stuff, and it's only now as an adult I'm talking to some family who like aren't in the religion who are like, oh yeah, like he knew heaps of stuff about all these things. And it is hard, yeah, because you get older and you're like, oh, I missed out, like he could have told me all this stuff, but he wasn't allowed, because just out of respect to my mum, because she didn't want us to hear some of the stuff that they would have viewed as like demonic.
Oh, wow. Yeah. But it's like, that's what I always think, it's never too late, really, like to and learn and connect. And yeah, I know people in their 40s, 50s that reconnected to family and reconnected in the community. And that's what I do love, is, you know, being able to bring people in.
You've got such like a positive outlook on life, I feel. And just talking to you, it seems quite intentional for yourself, especially last year talking about the referendum, because I know for myself I felt a lot of anger around it afterwards, but in a way it was like a reset, like a reset for my life path afterwards, where I kind of went, okay, like obviously I need to think about where my energy is going and onto what projects, because, you know, I need to value my time and what I'm actually sharing with people who are actually going to like reciprocate that. So how did you personally feel with the outcome with the referendum?
I feel like for that process, for me personally, it was a before, during and after as well that I was going through, like with the before and the split that was happening in the community. And although we know looking at the stats that it was still from the Aboriginal community a lot of yes votes, I was still trying to listen and be empathetic and open to all my mob and people who I love who were on the no side. And so that was also quite hard, and I saw how that split some people in the community, and that made me quite sad that that happened as well. I really thought about it, and this is just my opinion, but I really do believe that the mob who were voting no, and the fights that people were having between yes and no, I really do believe that all of us, whether we're on the yes or no side, had our community's best interest at heart. I'm not going to say all of us, actually. There's two people that shall not be named that we know I don't think had our mob and community in heart, but from our community level, I really do believe that we all just had hope or fear, or, you know, it's that basically your perspective of do you have hope for this thing, or do you have fear of this thing? And I do think that ultimately, though, we all did want what was best for our people at the end. We just had a different perspective of what that was. But having said that, so that was the before and the lead up, and just being like feeling a bit wignan that it was splitting so many people, and it's such a big topic. Like, it's not something that we can be like, oh, we can just agree to disagree. I get why people were so passionate. It's huge. And then when it came to the actual no outcome, I'm very thankful I was with all the mob up north. I was with my partner and his family up at Shark Bay. And it was nice to be with all those mob there to kind of, a lot of us were like, wow, like it was, I was hoping for yes, but still preparing myself for no. And even though I was trying to prepare for it, it still hit me. I was like, oh, wow. It actually took me a day or two to really process that. And I felt the same as you. It was like sadness. It was anger. It was like, okay, I'd spend nearly every day bringing my knowledge and being able to share culture in not just my community but the non-Aboriginal communities as well. And now I'm like, okay, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm just sticking to my mob. And that is genuinely how I felt at the beginning. And for my own like self-care, that's what I did. I pulled back from work that I had that were for corporates or for non-Aboriginal community jobs and things like that. And I just, for the first like month or so, only did stuff in the community. For me, I think children like are so pure, so innocent. I will always go and give time to children, whether they're Aboriginal or not Aboriginal. But for my adult work, I kind of put that to the side. But I spent time in the prisons and I spent time, in the different schools that I had lined up and things like that and in community centres. And that was kind of like my healing, just being with my community during that time and giving all my energy to that. And now I'm at a point where I'm just very wary of the floodgates having been opened and that there's a lot of people that and this is, again, just my opinion, but I'm seeing it on social media. It's just rampant now that anything to do with our mob is posted. The comments are going to be, unfortunately, majority negative. We're seeing the pushback on people, challenging Welcome to Country. We're seeing the pushback of local councils trying to pull acknowledgement to country. So we're just seeing, like, I believe that the floodgates have opened and people are looking around like, oh, okay, now we can start to say what we think because, you know, we saw the outcome. And so, yeah, I'm trying to still navigate in a way where I'm still authentically bringing what I can to the table. But the second I feel like I'm faking it, I'm talking to people that don't have any interest in like learning or engaging, or the second, yeah, I feel like I'm not being authentic, I'm pulling back now. So, yeah, nothing that I'm doing towards other people. It's more just stuff that I'm doing myself. Yeah.
Yeah, because you need to protect your own peace. You can't be taking on all this, like, colonial load and, you know, not see, like, that reciprocity back. People who are genuinely there to learn, hopefully make, like, good change. Because, it's interesting. Like, I know a lot of people have said stuff like, you've just burnt an entire generation of people now because of that outcome. I see it in that way, but definitely it's also in a way of, like, you look at those people who like voted no, for example, and I know for myself I was very like unsure in the beginning there because I felt like I didn't have enough information and anything to do with especially like changing the constitution. It's a big shift to go, okay, I'm just going to put all my like thoughts and efforts and everything just back into community because that's who needs to like who needs me and needs like that growth and love.
Yeah, and I think even if we look at our history and whether it's the policies or things in our past where government was doing something that was for, you know, meant to be for the betterment of our people and it ended up just to the detriment of our people, I completely look at all of our mob from a community level with that no vote being fearful because that's what we've been shown in our past. I do firmly believe, though, that a lot of us that were on that yes vote, it was about hope. It's going to affect treaty. We haven't had a trustworthy relationship in the past, so I do also understand that perspective. But, yeah, the no vote did still definitely hit me. And I just thought I still will do what I do, but I will also do that self-care, protect myself a little bit more and really make sure that most of my energy, which is where the love is anyway, is for community and for our generations. And yeah, there's nothing else I can really do than try to give as much as I can to the littlies now so that they're going to be, you know, as strong as they can be in the future if anything like this comes up again.
No, absolutely. I've got like a 2-year-old son. For me, I was just realizing he needs to be equipped with the knowledge on like how to look after himself. I feel like a lot of people feel like we need to like really go out of our way to explain culture and things so that they can understand and hopefully become more compassionate. But mm-hmm. sometimes people just aren't open to that. Yeah. So, yeah, like I think I said this earlier in the week. So my ex was Wadjala, mm-hmm. and like because I'm quite fair, I remember his family was super racist.
Oh, no. Yeah, classic.
Yeah, classic. yeah. But I remember I said to him one time, I was like, if you and I ever had kids, they're Noongar, like, just so you know. Yeah. And he was, like, shocked by that at the time. And I was like, what are you, like, why are you surprised by that? Like, I'm so proud to be, like, Noongar, of course. Like, any child I have, like, no matter who it was with, it's going to be Noongar. And, you know, I'm super lucky that I did end up with a Noongar man who's, like, you know, super into, like, learning culture and just being, like, a supportive, like, dad as well. So, yeah, I'm really excited, I guess, for my son in particular because he's seeing, like, that positive role modelling through his father as well.
Yeah, that's very true.
Because you were on country in Shark Bay when that outcome happened and you had your partner and some friends there to kind of confide in. What is some stuff that you do for yourself, for your well-being, like you were saying, walking on country and, you know, just connecting there, just that physical movement of your body is a really big thing.
Yeah, I love to stay active. So if it's walking out on country, playing basketball or going to the gym, that's one thing, active. I do also both appreciate my family time and my solo time. Both are good and both are important. So I get a lot of energy from just going and sitting and yarning with my family or picking up the phone, and then they're stuck on the phone with me for like an hour. I think I'm starting to realize it's probably a thing that people know. If Ricky's going to come over, like, just be prepared, she'll be here. But I left my brother's house last night, but yeah, so I get a lot of energy from that, just going and being able to yarn and debrief and just what's going on and check in.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe something to think about is, like, you know, sometimes unconsciously we're doing these things and, like, you know, it's just like for our well-being, but it's like a natural thing that you don't realize till having some conversations that maybe it does relate to culture.
For sure, yeah.
Because, like, even like myself just being drawn to filmmaking, it's storytelling and, like, you know, I've had some family members say, like, you know, you're keeping the knowledge sort of thing because you're, like, getting it all down. And even talking to Mob Over East, they said the same thing. They're like, well, that's why we're all drawn to this kind of work, because, like, we're all going to be the knowledge keepers in our families because we're all learning it and recording it. So,
yeah,
just how it's, like, moving into a modern way is really cool.
I do very much, yeah, I do very much believe that spirit here is extremely strong. Like, I always say to people, I'm very spiritual. Not everyone is, and that's okay. A lot of our culture anyway is about respect, which we can all share.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Noongar Wellbeing with me, Brooke Collard, and my guest, Rikita Wally. You can find more episodes at sbs.com.au/Noongar Wellbeing or follow the series in podcast apps like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the SBS Radio app. 4 to 1.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.